for today at 6 p.m. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2015, and since we don't have anything on agenda, we're gonna have a workshop from staff, and they're gonna teach us some good stuff while we eat some good food. So whenever staff is ready, we'll be here, and I see him eating, so we'll wait a little bit. So I just wanted to open up the meeting.
Yeah, let me just kind of kick this off. It was one of the commissioners. Well, to back up, we tried to provide as much training, if you will, or address topics that you have an interest in. You know, we've done like CEQA trainings. We've done general planning trainings. And so we had a request for another training to become a little bit more familiarized with the process and what it looks like and what we do. And so I asked Ellen to put together a kind of an overview of our process to give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look, if you will, about, you know, what happens when a developer walks through the door. What do, and how do we view it? You know, she'll talk in a minute about some kind of basic tenets that we have. You know, our job is primarily to make sure that as a project walks through the door, it's compatible with the general plan and meets the zoning requirements. I mean, that in essence is our job. That's what we do. We like to think it's a little bit more than that. And I know Ellen and I work really hard to make sure that we are making sure that all the policies and the intent of the general plan are upheld with every project that comes through the door, as well as meeting all the requirements, the development standards of the municipal code. So we're pretty excited to be able to kind of give you this information. This may spur some additional discussion. I'll leave it up to Ellen how she wants to interact with the commission. But at the end, you know, if there's something else that comes up, that you know, another topic or something you want to talk about, please let us know, because we'll be more than happy to address that. And on that note, I'll turn it over to Ellen.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Just as a housekeeping item, I would like to take roll call really quick, because it is even though it is a workshop, it's still a public meeting. So I will start with Commissioner Barcellas.
Yes.
Sorry. Are you eating right now, so you can't say anything? Commissioner Barcellas. Commissioner Gutierrez.
Here.
Commissioner Hudson. Commissioner Perez.
Here.
Chairman Custodio.
Here. I also want to add, if we can do the Pledge of Allegiance, that'd be great.
Just sure.
So we can do our honors here. Ready, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you for that, and stopping and just taking a couple seconds there. And Ellen, you have the floor.
All right. Thank you, Chairman. And thank you to everybody for being here on a Monday and a little bit later than usual to go over the basic planning process. So some of this will probably be a little bit of a review. Some of it may be a good refresher or something new. But basically, this is just going to be the basic planning process and kind of a day in the life of a planner at City of Reedley, which is me. So the objective tonight is for me to kind of talk about this whole thing, because this is an example of one aspect of the planning process. So there's a lot of different things that are going on at once, a lot of if-then scenarios, and so that's kind of what the planning process is like. But tonight I do kind of want to let you in on a little secret that basically that can be boiled down to two things. It's maintaining a lot of checklists and herding a lot of cats. So, because there's a lot of different entities involved in the planning process and trying to get all those expertises together in one checklist, and also looking at planning law, our general plan, zoning ordinance, etc. And so when you combine those things, that is, as I would call, planning harmony, and that's what I've called it, because at this point it doesn't really exist, but hopefully it will. So to kind of go over, there's basically three steps to the planning process. First is preliminary development review. Second is the actual development review. And then finally, the path to approval. So kind of split it up into three parts here. But before we do that, I did want to talk a little bit about the entitlement hierarchy, because every entitlement either has to come before others, or they're all kind of related in that sense. So first, the general plan is at the top of that hierarchy. So everything that comes after it has to be consistent with the general plan. And so right now we have our 2030 general plan that's in place at this time. And then below that, we have a community plan or specific plan. And so that is basically what it says. A specific plan pertains to a specific area in the city that has a certain theme or certain architecture, or certain design guidelines. So we do have a what's called the Kings River Corridor specific plan as an example right now, and that's kind of in the river bottom area, and the Reed Beachwood organization, which was recently annexed into the city. There's a subdivision, or there's a tentative map there at this point. But other cities have downtown specific plans to create that unity downtown by having certain commonalities, like a certain type of bench or architectural feature or signage. So those are kind of those are what specific plans are, basically. And then you go to the zoning ordinance, which has to be consistent with the general plan, and that gives information about property development standards and entitlement information, such as the conditional use permits and site plan reviews. That it has a lot of basically what to do, when to do it, and that goes over the process in more detail. And then I have the subdivision of land below that, because in some cases, sometimes the land doesn't have to be subdivided in order for the entitlements above it to occur, but sometimes it does happen at the same time. But the subdivision of land has to be consistent with the zoning ordinance and has to be consistent with the general plan, as most things are. And so examples of the subdivision of land are lot line adjustments, parcel mergers, parcel maps, and subdivision maps. So part one is the preliminary development review. So people come in and ask us a lot of questions, or they come in and have an owner of the property comes in and says, this is where my property is, what can I do with it? They take that approach, and sometimes developers come in and say, hey, this is what I want to do with my property, can I do it? So there's different ways that people approach us about what they want to do with their property. And so basically there's kind of an interview process. There's a lot of questions that we ask, and the basic questions are as follows. So we kind of start big, is the project in the city limits? And if it's not, then we go through the annexation and pre-zone process, and then we go to, and then that's just within the city, and then the rest of it, there has to be an application that goes through LAFCO. So if the project is in the city, then you are good to go on the next basic question, which is the project consistent with the general plan, and specifically the general plan planned land use designation? So you find their property and see what color it is, and if they have an idea of what they do want to do, for example, if they want to put a shopping center somewhere and that parcel is designated as single-family residential, then they have to go through a general plan amendment first. But if they want to put in a shopping center and it's designated as commercial, then they are good to go for the next basic question.
Ellen, could I stop you there real quick?
Sure.
Could you just, to refresh everybody's memory, what is LAFCO? What does that stand for?
LAFCO stands for the Local Area Formation Commission.
All right.
So I apologize. I kind of blew right through that.
Fine.
But so that commission is, they oversee the changes of boundaries of all, like of cities, of counties, of special districts, like cemetery districts and irrigation districts. And so they kind of oversee and they kind of act as the mediator between, you know, the city that wants to change the boundary and expand their boundary versus the county, which is by definition having some area of their county removed and becoming city. So there's some processes that are involved in that as part of the annexation project. So first, the city itself has to approve the fact that we want to annex the property in. And so by doing that, there's preliminary development review that's involved. So what do they want to do with the property? What do they want to pre-zone it as? And so it would go to this body, the Planning Commission, and then it would go to City Council. And then once the pre-zoning and the annexation is approved, then all of that information would be submitted to LAFCO. So there would be a separate application for that. And then that would go through a public hearing with that commission, and property owners would be involved, so they would have to consent to the annexation. And so they are notified of that during the city's process as well.
So Ellen, prior to that step, mm-hmm. if it went to LAFCO and LAFCO felt that the application that was submitted would not be in the best interest of that area, mm-hmm. could they just flat deny it?
They could, but LAFCO and the county is involved with the process during the city portion of the annexation. So when there's intent to annex on the city's part, then we do get together with LAFCO and with Fresno County to make sure that this is part of what's called the memorandum of understanding that we have with LAFCO with the Fresno County. So we do try to meet early and often with them before it gets to that, or so it's not kind of out of the blue that this is happening. So there is time for people to talk about it and discuss it. And if the application would not comply with the memorandum of understanding, then it wouldn't go forward. So there would have to be changes that would be made.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. They could have requirements that they want you to satisfy prior mm-hmm. to any changes being made.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the city's conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. You meet these conditions before we move to the next stage. Okay.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also to kind of add on to that, as part of LAFCO and as part of the memorandum of understanding, there is a requirement of anything that's annexed in to the city, there has to be 50% of that property has to have imminent development on it.
Okay.
So 50% of the property, they would have to have some sort of preliminary site plan or some sort of idea of what the property will be developed for. So that also kind of helps answer some of the potential questions that someone may have. So what's going to go here and that sort of thing. So that's part of that, and that can't change through the process unless that change is still consistent with the MOU.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Does the county, does LAFCO still have a policy here in Fresno County mm-hmm. where the development has to have a final map recorded prior to recording the annexation? I know, like, when I was working in Tulare County, we didn't mm-hmm. do that, but when I came to Fresno County, that was a new thing. And I'm wondering if they still do that. Do they still require the final map be approved for that development on the annexation site?
I don't believe so. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but
a condition of approval or something like that for the annexation.
That is something that LAFCO has kind of vacillated over the years, and depending on who the CEO was, really, the law says it must be accepted by the city. It doesn't have to be recorded. But I know I can tell you some of the CAOs said, yes, it's got to be recorded, and others haven't. So it depends on the vintage of kind of LAFCO.
Yeah.
since I've been here in the last 2 years with the last two chief administrative officers, they have only required that the city accept a final map. But some of that is a direct relationship that was created by virtue of LAFCO being, if you will, an arm of the county. And so that's where that perspective came from, that, you know, you had to follow the MOU, as Ellen mentioned, that it was the 50% eminent development. But now over the last couple of years, is LAFCO has really kind of weaned themselves away from the county and become a more independent group. I think you'd find that their perspective is probably a lot different than it was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very much wanting to make sure that whatever comes before them is in compliance with the Nox-Cortese. That's the name of the body of law that governs annexation, Nox-Cortese. And not so much interested in whether the county thinks it's good or not, or whether there's eminent development, because that's really not part of what they're looking for. One of the kind of key phrases you'll often hear when annexation's talked about is orderly development, meaning are things adjacent to each other?
Don't leapfrog development.
You know, not something like way out, mm-hmm. like somewhere else. Not to say that can't happen, and it does regularly happen. So a good example would be the city of Reedley, our airport. The airport itself is part of the city. In other cities, you'll see their sewer water treatment plant will be like 5 miles out, you know, off on some road. It's considered to be part of the city. It's in the city jurisdiction, but it is leapfrogging. So kind of, if you will, a good example of leapfrogging would be really something that would be, you know, next to Dinuba, and there's nothing in between. So adjacency is really important. The key is adjacency, orderly development, and eminent development. The eminent development thing is something that may change here in the next couple of years. It's a big topic, especially with housing elements and other kinds of things, but it's probably more than you wanted to know, but it has changed over the last 10 years, and yeah.
So are there any other questions about annexations at this point? Okay, so kind of going back to the general plan land use designation, having the right color on the map helps with what you want to develop, so to make sure that is consistent. Going on to zoning, same thing. The zoning has to be consistent with the general plan, and the zoning has to match, and it has to have that allowable use if you have a use in mind. So kind of same thing. If it's not consistent, you would have to do a change of zone application. And then you would, after that, if you have a use in mind, you would go to our Chapter 25 land use matrix to determine whether the use or whether the project is a by right or conditional use. So examples of by right uses, it depends on the zone district you're in. For example, anything with alcohol sales or alcohol consumption, whether it's restaurants or convenience stores or restaurants selling alcohol for off-site consumption, that is always a conditional use permit. So you would always have to go through that conditional use process, and that comes before this planning commission where you guys approve that. And then if it's a by right use, then you would just do a site plan review, which is a similar process, but it does not involve a public hearing. So certain shopping centers, for example, Les Schwab was done as a site plan review because it was a by right use in that zone district that it's in. So this kind of depends, but you either choose, it's kind of like choosing your own adventure here. So depending on what you want to do, that's what shapes the process that you take. And then finally, does the project involve the division of land? So most of the time, if it's a residential project, it will involve the division of land if it's single family homes. So there'd be a tentative parcel map or a tentative subdivision map, and then it moves on to a final parcel map or final subdivision map. And if the land is already divided how the owner likes it, then they can move on to the next step. So these are kind of the basic checklists that I go over in my mind when somebody wants to come in and find something or want something to do with their property. So these are kind of the basic things that you look at. And so this is why the positioning of property is very important, because as you could see, if somebody wanted to do a residential development and they were in a if somebody wanted to do a commercial development and they were in a residential zone district, residential general plan, so that adds 2, 3, 4 extra months of processing time, resources, and money by default. So it is important to position property, and it's also important to find out what you want to do and then stick with it, because if you have to change things completely, then there will be other processes involved. And also, as I kind of mentioned earlier, some entitlements can be processed concurrently to save that time. Some can be processed separately. But as always, it depends on what the processes are. So you can't accept the site plan of that commercial shopping center without having them do a general plan amendment and a change of zone, because those always have to be consistent. So those are always things that need to be done first. So to provide an example, we're going to take a look at Blossom Trail. They, as you may recall, back in 2008 was when they first started this project, and so they filed an annexation, general plan amendment, and a change of zone back in 2008, but that was when the economy wasn't going so well, and so it's kind of been put on hold for a long time until recently, so about last year, when they wanted to do something with it again. But luckily, they were able to annex the property in by submitting the final map just to kind of finalize the annexation. So if you kind of go through the checklist, so there's the property right there. It's on Manning and Zumwalt. Where that green box is, and so they are in the city limits, so they can go on to the next step. So, and this is taking a look at the general plan land use designation. So on the left is the designation, and that was the original project scope, if you will, or the project designations. And then on the right is what they submitted as their preliminary site plan. So the text is kind of small, but on the right picture where the preliminary site plan is, if you look on the top left or the northeast, that whole light blue box is commercial. And then the kind of salmon pink on the bottom right-hand corner is apartments. The orange is single-family residential. Yellow is duplexes. And then the light green and light yellow on the top left, that is commercial. Our office and commercial uses. So if you compare that to what is actually in the general plan, there are some differences there. There's a park in the middle of it, which is no longer there, and some of the residential density is different. So on the top, on the bottom right-hand corner, the density is increased, and then it's all commercial along Manning. So because of those would be considered significant changes in the general plan if they went with that project. So they would have to go through a general plan amendment for this one.
I have a question.
Sure.
Was this changed from the 2008 version of the project?
Yes.
Like the zoning that's shown down here on the bottom? Mm-hmm. Was that changed to accommodate the project in 2008? And then the developers came back and now they want to change it again to... Is that what they're doing, essentially?
Yeah. So they changed the project from what was originally proposed. So the general plan on the left, that is what was originally proposed.
Oh, so they never went through the entitlement process. They just had plans set out, but they didn't go through the general plan hearing and rezoning hearings in 2008.
They actually did go through that in 2008. Okay. Yeah. So they went through the general plan and rezone process because they wanted to annex the property back in 2008 because it wasn't in the city.
So it was approved, and now they're going to pursue it again, mm-hmm. and they're changing it again.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Because after after everything was approved and it wasn't even annexed in yet, and they had approved the tentative parcel map, and so then they stopped. And they put it on hold, but it was still able to get the tentative map never expired, and the annexations they requested extensions. So it was able to survive up until this point, and then a part of annexation, so they had all the plans set out, but as part of the annexation, if the city accepts the final map, then it can be annexed into the city. So that's kind of what happened. And then after the annexation, they decided that they wanted to change the design of the project. And so that meant that they have to redo they have to change general plan, zoning, and the tentative map.
Can I jump in here real
sure.
quick? If I can, about 2 years ago, we did some economic development, and we took people on a tour, and this is one of the projects that we showed everybody for a variety of reasons. One, again, 2 years ago, all the entitlements had been approved. It had gone through LAFCO. LAFCO had approved it, but they had never recorded the annexation. They kept asking for extension after extension after extension.
What was the purpose of that? Because they were unsure of their future plans? Kim?
Exactly.
So they
didn't want to record. So one of the things that we did from an economic development standpoint was we went to developers and said, look, if you're that close, all you have to do is record it. Record it. Get it into the city. Because when you come to change it now, the only people you have to deal with is the city.
Okay, versus going back through
versus
LAFCO
going
process.
Back through an entire process that involves the city, the county, and LAFCO. So get it into the city, then that eliminates one hurdle for you, actually two hurdles for you down the road if you ever want to change it. So that's one thing that occurred with this particular piece. The other thing that staff is very excited about is that really if you look at the general plan, the whole idea is that you create corridors, right? You know, Button Willow's a corridor, Dinuba's a corridor, you know, Manning is a corridor, you know, Reed's sort of kind of, it is, you know, because of the college. So one of the things that we saw was Manning is a corridor that leaves the city. And someday it's going to grow, right, across street from Save Mart and so on and so forth. And we know that from an economic development perspective, if you have residential next to a commercial, and if you will, you put a park or residential as kind of the end, like on this picture, you won't get commercial on the other side. It kind of ends, it's kind of a stopper, if you will. So if you think about a corridor, it's all red, right, which is all the commercial. Well, the minute you insert yellow, single family, who's going to develop on the other side? Nobody is, because the continuity of the commercial center, isn't going to draw businesses. So we viewed it as, especially its location, which is right next to Zumwalt, we want that commercial corridor to go beyond Zumwalt. And you can see even in looking at this, it's red, tan, yellow, and then red on the other side is Zumwalt. So you've really disrupted your whole corridor concept of bringing, you know, commercial in. Interestingly enough, in this case, it kind of makes sense that everything below the commercial would be single family and multiple family. Obviously, buffers, and then you've got the school. So that's kind of traditional, if you will, or common to see. You know, I mean, you drive in anywhere in Fresno on a major street, it's really lined with commercial. You don't see, you know, a bunch of commercial and then a bunch of single family fronting onto that, right?
I think so, you've missed some of the flow of traffic because people would say it's easier for me to go to this place and get everything done
exactly.
versus in skipping around in that area.
So when this particular developer came in, that was one of the things that we encouraged them to do was, hey, make the whole thing commercial across the frontage. Don't break it up. It doesn't make sense. And so they came back with this design, which we were very, very pleased with. We're pleased for a variety of reasons. One, in Reedley, you know, we'll be hard-pressed to get a major developer to come in and buy 200 lots. I mean, if we're doing 5 to 10 startups a year, I mean, that's 20 years of stock. So if you look at the way it was designed, especially with the cul-de-sac, it lends itself to the sale of lots to somebody. So they could sell that one cul-de-sac to somebody. They could sell the next kind of street up to the north around the next 10 or 15 lots at a time. And that's probably more marketable for them than getting somebody to come in and buy 50 lots. Because 50 lots is 5 to 10 years worth of product for somebody. And they may not, from an economic development, want to stretch themselves out that far. So I throw that in because this one was a little bit unique. We had a real opportunity to kind of do a do-over, you know, if you will. And so we're in the process of doing that do-over. And the design, I think, is much, much better. We've really enjoyed working with the developer. Ellen's done a great job of working with them and those applications. I know she's beginning to process, and we'll probably talk a little bit more in a little bit about some of the things that we look at. So thanks for allowing me to interject.
No problem.
Could I ask a question real quick? The 2030 general plan didn't change the zoning?
No, it did not.
So it didn't. So it's the same as it was in 2008?
Correct.
So now we do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So let's talk about that. In this respect, we jokingly say, and this is kind of a planner term, and hopefully your colleague at the end will agree, we're changing the chairs on the Titanic. Really, all the uses that are there today will be there tomorrow, with the exception of the park. We're still going to have red. We're still going to have multiple family. We're still going to have yellow. All we're doing in this case is moving those colors around a little bit. So in this case, it's pretty easy for staff because we go, hey, this is what the general plan contemplated, right? There'd be a commercial center, a residential component, both multiple and single family. So with this became more of a function of design than looking at it from you had a purely agricultural piece, they were going to annex it in, or an existing piece in the city that they wanted to change it from one designation to the other, and we would be asking them why, how does it fit, what is this, how does it work, those kinds of questions. So this one's a little, you know, you'll find a theme that there are all these one-offs, meaning, you know, you kind of got to sit and look at it and go, okay, so why is this the way it is? Or, you know, if this were changing the general plan, we'd be saying, why do you want to change it? How does your project better fit the policies of the general plan? You know, how does it fit within zoning? In this case, like I said, we're just kind of rearranging the chairs on the Titanic because, again, there's still the red, yellow, and brown.
Okay. Thank you.
And kind of, and adding on to that as well, if you go, so the next checklist item would be the zoning. And so because that is a good point that the general plan did not change the zoning, but whenever there's an annexation process, those parcels to be annexed in have to be pre-zoned. So they're not in the city yet until they're officially recorded, but there is a zoning designation that's pre-zoned there. So what's supposed to happen is on our zoning map, whenever something gets annexed in, we will put colors on those, or we'll draw the colors on those parcels. But at this time, we don't have that. But a future item, we will try to fix our zoning map, and that's the citywide rezone that was initiated at the last Planning Commission meeting. So that's something that we're working on, and that's also why the diagram on the left does not have colors on it, because this is what was the proposed pre-zoning for the annexation that was applied for back in 2008. But it is consistent. But this was consistent with the general plan because it has the park and the different zoning or the appropriate zoning density designations on there. But because the project is changing, things are moving around, so a rezone will also have to be done here. You would have to do a rezone for that. And it's pretty common that if the zoning or the general plan is different, there's almost always, you almost always have to pair that with a general plan or a rezone, because usually, because they're supposed to be consistent in the first place, so if you change one of them, you usually have to change the other one. And then, finally, it does this involve the division of land? So on the right, you see 68 proposed lots, and on the left, there's one or two. So this is definitely a tentative subdivision map. So they will have to go through that process as well. So something that Kevin and I have developed is what's called the preliminary development review. So basically, this is something that we draft for people that have a project description or have an idea of what they want to do with the property. And so we ask those basic questions, and then we let them know what the process is, what the timing is, what the fees are, what some of the property development standards are for those for the proposed zone districts or the proposed uses that they want. So this is just a couple of pages of that preliminary development review. And so as you can see, there's the general plan amendment, rezone, either amending the map in this case or creating a new one, and then doing a site plan review further down the road, because at this point they're just changing colors on the map. And so once they actually want to construct things, then that's when they would submit a site plan review. So this is something that we've done to a couple of different projects, and this basically just comes from asking questions, what can we do with the property? And so what we can do is we can take a look at it and give them this information, and then we don't hear from them for a month or two, and that's when they're getting to work on putting together the site plan and filling out the applications. So this is kind of a checklist for them of what they need to do to submit projects. So there are a couple of examples that you may be familiar with, just to reiterate how it will always depend on how the property is positioned at this point in time. So what the existing condition of the property is will depend on what you want to do. So for example, Dopkins Funeral Chapel, they were here at our last planning commission meeting. And so to kind of go over that, in order for them to go where they want to go, they would have to do a general plan amendment, an annexation, change of zone, and then a conditional use permit, because that would be a conditional use in the zone that they wanted to do. So because of there's a lot of steps that needed to be taken in that instance based on the existing condition of the property. Another example is the Kings Canyon Unified School District Administrative Offices. They purchased the property that used to have the Granger Building on it, and so that was zoned as light industrial. So they would have to change the zone to put offices on there, and then they would have to do a site plan review. So it was in the city. It was the general plan was public facilities, so they were good there. So they needed to do two steps for that. Les Schwab was originally just a site plan review, but then we found out that there was that they created APN parcels, but they didn't create legal lots of record. So that tentative parcel map came before you guys a couple months ago. But otherwise, if that was all positioned, they would have just done a site plan review. And then another example is something that was just approved is the Manning Medical Offices. So at 784 East Manning, it was supposed to be a medical complex. So there's two buildings in the front, and then they have some vacant space in the back. So they're building an 8,000 square foot medical office on the farther parcel for that.
Where is that located again? What's the cross streets?
It's near Columbia and Manning, so okay. They're Walgreens, and then it's directly to the left of Walgreens. I think it's Walgreens,
If you drive into that medical building, straight ahead, it's in the back.
Isn't that Spivak's place?
Pardon?
Spivak.
Oh, I'm
Dr.
not sure.
Dr. Spivak is in the front. Yeah.
On the north side or the south side of Manning?
North side.
North side.
Okay.
So can I jump in here real quick? These preliminary development reviews are absolutely critical from our perspective, because what you're hearing Ellen talk about is two different things in one document. One, it gives a developer process. You need an annexation, you need a site plan review, you need a conditional use permit, whatever that process is for entitlement, we lay it all out for you. Not only do we lay it out for you, but we tell you how much it's going to cost. Tell them how much it's going to cost. And invariably, in that conversation, is always the conversation of time. So, how long does it take to get to Planning Commission? That's usually the next question. How long does it take to get to the City Council? So, for a developer, you know, it's really important to understand that concept of time and process. The other thing that we do is, you know, if they tell us it's 100,000 square feet, we'll give them their development impact fees, and we can take a guess at what their building permits are. So again, from the developer's perspective, it's a really, really important document. The other perspective that we think is also equally important is the technical side. So, because, and Ellen and I talked about this, because we do this every day, you know, we kind of don't always think about this stuff because we do it every day. But one of the many things that we provide is a technical component. So we will attach to these the water plats, the sewer plats, and storm drain plats. And that's a plat is just a map that shows where the lines run in the street. So the developer can now take that information to his designer and go, here you go. Oh, so there's an 8-inch water line in front of my house or my building. He goes, okay, great. Now I know how to get water from the street to my project. Mm. Or we say, hey, the building height is 35 feet. It's the tallest your building can be. Or it's got to be 10 foot setback off the rear property line or the side property line. So they know where, now they know more technical stuff about where they need to put the building on that site. What are the landscaping requirements? What are the fencing requirements? What are the parking requirements? Oh, you're this? Oh, the parking ratio and wheel site code sections. You know, it says, you know, you're a bank and it's, you know, one spot for every 800 square feet. Oh, you're a church, it's five stalls for every 40, you know, chairs or so many square feet or whatever the case may be. So it serves really two functions. Really, we've designed it so the developer kind of knows the process and money things that are important to them, but also a document they can take to their designer, and if they've got a halfway decent designer, they can pretty much put together a good site plan right there, mm-hmm. and that saves everybody time and effort.
You talk about, Kevin, how the city has made changes in different realms. Is it more common for us to look at other cities and find some efficiencies and take some of their ideas and say, okay, that works great, and they're attracting development in that way?
Okay, so you just asked two different questions.
I'm just trying to trip you up, that's all.
And you know what? That's a great question. I get asked that all the time, and I think it's a really hard question to answer because there's so many facets to it. Mm-hmm. So, in my years of experience and working in different agencies, there are things that, quite frankly, as a director, I kind of go, we will never do it that way. And then there are other things that we go, we will absolutely do it that way. One of the things that I am adamant about, and Ellen can always correct me if I go wrong, is customer service. So if they come in, sit down, and you tell us what you want, we will do everything to help get you there. But it's based on you're bringing us a quality project. So that's part of it. Part of it, you know, and again, I'll defer to Gabriel and Alan. You know, my experience has been that for developers, and we've talked about this, you know, the only thing that they can never get back is time. It's not money. Money very seldom is an issue for a developer who wants to do a project. So we found that it's absolutely critical that if we tell them, hey, if you submit on this date, we'll get you to Planning Commission here. That is worth gold. They will pay three times whatever you're asking if you can guarantee that. Well, we guarantee it. I mean, we, you know, between Alan and I, we make sure that it's a guarantee we can hold up, barring any unforeseens. So those are things that are really helpful. That's what draws people to this community. I have to admit, a community near us...
South of
us? That nope. One?
North of us?
North of us.
Nope, even further north. And probably a little east, I'm sorry, west, is having a very difficult time. I can tell you right now, in the city of Reedley, we charge arguably $2,000. They charge $5,200 for the same application. What we do in 30 to 45 days, they do in, if you're lucky, 90 to 120. You know, you call us, you know, or you submit an application, we call you in 2 weeks or so, hey, how you doing? Or here's all your conditions of, you know, or comments we've received. You know, it's referred to the black box in another location. So those are the things that draw people to us. But here's the other thing, and I will say it again, and we were talking about it the other day. It has nothing to do with what we do here. Nothing to do at all. It has everything to what you do out there in the private sector. I've had several meetings with Granville. Ellen's been there. It's been said in groups, you know, Granville and others have said, we love Reedley. We have no problem. We will come there tomorrow. But they can't find the right land deal. Or the land is three times what its real value is. Those are things that we can't control.
Beyond your control, so it just kind of frightens them away.
It doesn't frighten them away. It just takes
not
a.
Good business.
It's just not. Yeah. It's not good business. So they'll go where, you know, somebody wants $100,000 an acre. That's, you know, actually I know one piece of land. I always pick on it. You know, it's about an acre and a half, and they want close to $900,000. That's like beyond reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And their comment is, well, you know, I can get it in another city. Well, if you could excavate your land, just like my house, if I could move it to Southern California, I could retire tomorrow.
It's the same scenario. You know? If you were in another area, of course your
right.
Yeah.
Real estate would be worth more.
You know, and you hear, because we all hear, so I can say this, where, thanks.
What?
Did you shut off the recorder?
No, that was the map too, the Manning. I wanted to see what the Manning.
You want to see the map.
Yeah, I was like, I got to see it.
The visual kind of guy.
Oh, by the way, we're all going to need iPads, right? So we can check out things while they're talking.
Yeah, right. Where you've heard locally, somebody will say, hey, jack up your price so that because now when I'm trying to sell something comparable, it looks good. When the, you know, that never ever works.
Nope.
I mean, people know what the market value is. And there's a reason that things aren't filling up. So, I don't mean to be disparaging in any way, because Ellen's worked really hard at streamlining all of our stuff, and the city has a great reputation, and we've been able to bring in some really good businesses. But if there's any impediment, that's probably what it is that we've just got some overinflated land prices that, you know, I don't have any control over, and, you know, it is what it is, but we're doing really good. And so did that sort of kind of answer your question?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I had a better answer for you. Like, I could go change our process and all of a sudden everybody flock in. But timing is really, really important, and good customer service. And many developers know, quite frankly, you folks are a big key to all of that, and so is the city council. And that, you know, there are city councils you've heard, like, fights break out, or they're in shouting matches, or things like that.
Now they make the news, and everybody looks at them.
Yeah, exactly. So
behave that way?
You know, mm-hmm. and they do, and so...
At least so.
You know, it's risk to a developer. You know, does he want to come in and meet with people that have some knowledge and ability to get things done for him, like Ellen and I, and we have a great administration, a great council, a great planning commission, that, oh, yeah, when we, when we talk to him about the planning commission, because they do ask, right, you know, how's your planning commission? They're great. You won't have any problems as long as you bring us a good project. You know, you bring us junk. You won't get past staff, but if you do, you're not going to get past planning commission. Oh, okay, great. So those are all the things that that play into those decisions of people coming here.
And we have gotten a couple of compliments about the preliminary development review because, like Kevin said, we provide all of the information up front. Try not to surprise people with things, oh, by the way, you have to do this, oh, by the way, you have to do this, and we tell them 2 weeks later or, you know, the day before we plan to approve it. So we try to let everybody know what the process is up front. And so we do provide the plat map, so where the infrastructure is, references to the code, so people know exactly where to look. And we also include the applications that it were revamped, I think, a year or so ago. And if you look in the binders that I passed out, the black binders, that's kind of our resource guide for development. So we have our fee schedule in there. We have we have all of our applications in there if you wanted to take a look at them. We have there's the list of permitted conditional use matrix in Chapter 25 in there, and there's also kind of a cheat sheet for zone district standards. Like, it lists all of the setbacks, and there's some resource information for that for you guys. And all of this is available on our website, and it's available by request for us if you're at the counter. So we do try to make all this information as available as we can to help people out and to make the process easier for them. So that's for you guys to keep. I think the fees haven't changed that much because I think it's a year or so old or something, but the applications are the same and the processes are the same, and I just updated the Chapter 25 because that was approved a year ago. So if you have any questions or would like to see what those things are, then you have that in front of you. And of course, along with our applications, we have more checklists. So when you do a general plan submittal, when you do a conditional use permit submittal, the checklists lay out all of the things that we will be looking for when they submit something. So does the site plan is it to scale? Is it was it drawn on CAD or was it drawn with a pencil? Those sorts of things. Vicinity maps, landscaping plans. So those are all the things that we expect to see. So we lay out our expectations up front and let them know that they need to, they should submit all these things. And the more that they provide to us, the faster and the more efficient we can process things. So we don't have to keep going back and say, hey, could you send me this? Or could you provide me this information? Which brings me to the submittal process. So all of this is the preliminary stuff. So nobody's even submitted an application yet. It's just kind of asking questions and getting information and doing the preliminary development review process. So so we give the preliminary development review to people, and they draw the site plans, fill out the applications, and then they submit everything. So this is a clean version of the Blossom Trail tentative map that was submitted. So this is just the front page of what they submitted to us. And so right away I have another mental checklist of the submittal. So I take a look at the site plan. I see, is it clear, complete, and accurate? Is the project consistent with the general plan? There's goals and policies, like there has to be 50% of the parking lot has to be shaded. There can't be any blank walls facing public right-of-way. So those are a couple things that come to mind when I look at elevations and site plans to look to make sure that those are taken care of. look at the property development standards. Do they have the correct setbacks and correct distance between structures, etc.? What's in proximity to the project? Because projects don't occur in vacuums. They may have effects on surrounding land uses or buildings. So take a look at that. Where are the public utilities, fire hydrants, trash enclosures? Are city standards referenced? Are details included if things aren't to standard, like if they have a wrought iron fence or landscaping or something like that? So those are all the things that you look at, that we look at when it's first submitted. And last but not least, is this a signature project? Is something that we want, is this a project that we want in Reedley and that we think would be successful in Reedley? So this is a quick example of just the first page that I marked up. So there's a couple of things that I saw within 2-3 minutes of looking at this, that they have the incorrect zoning designation on there and incorrect general plan, the wrong phone extension, and that they do actually need a tract map number. So these are kind of the little things that you can look at first blush and call them up and say, hey, can you change these things and resubmit it so we can, you know, give this draft and start routing this draft out to other entities. So this is just kind of the first review checklist thing that that we go through to look at projects. And then this is a whole workshop of its own, CEQA, but I did just want to touch on it because that is something that is important and that is part of the entitlement process, but it is its own process within itself. So this is just a brief example or checklist, if you will, about the different levels of impact that a project can have on the environment. So if you... So depending on the project, you can sometimes answer this question, yes, yes with, yes without, no, it's fine, it's exempt. So that's kind of something that is involved and something that the applicant helps us with the impact and everything. So CEQA is happening all at the same time as the rest of this stuff, but this is just kind of a brief glimpse into that. And so this is, now we're getting to the cat herding. So this is where we, I do the preliminary review, send back for comments, potentially a call them up, say that I submitted everything, it looks good. So then that's when we start routing things around to other entities. So this is the request for routing, a request for comment form that I send out. So I put a brief project description on there, identify the zoning, the parcel numbers, and the comment period. So they have to have all their comments to me by a certain time. So that's what the basic form looks like. So people check to see if the project will have effects on their jurisdiction and let me know about the conditions of approval that they would require. And so these are just a few of the people that we routed around to, and I apologize that that's kind of hard to read if you look on the screen, but examples are the fire department, public works, engineering, building, and fire police. So that's just city agencies. And then we usually route things around to the school district because they there's school impact fees that need to be paid, so the school knows that projects are happening so they can... provide comments if they want to. We send them to irrigation districts. If the project is near the Kings River, we send it to the Kings River Conservation District. If it's new development, there will need to be like PG&E and Comcast and other utilities that are just notified if they want to comment or just to kind of give them a heads up that this is happening. And then we even route it around to state agencies like the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, if it's going to have a significant effect on fish and wildlife, and the list can go on and on and on. So sometimes, depending on the project, we route it to mostly city agencies and city departments. Sometimes we route it to 5 people, sometimes we route it to 10, 20, 30. It all just kind of depends on the project. But this is a basic routing list that we send comments out to, because because they have their own expertise and they have their own conditions that need to be put in place. So I'm not going to be the one to say where the fire extinguishers are. I'd rather have the fire department tell somebody where the fire extinguishers are going to go. So I let the cats free. They have a 15-day comment period, and then after that comment period is over, then I compile all the conditions from each department and entity. And then, as Kevin mentioned, once the comment period's over, I try to send all of the conditions in draft form to the applicant to make sure that they agree, or if they have any questions or clarifications, we can get those out of the way before the final conditions of approval are submitted. So basically, the conditions of approval, you've seen them in all of the conditional use permits, and so you've seen that before, but basically conditions are yet another checklist of what needs to be done to complete a project. So good conditions list who will do what, where, and when. So we do have the standard conditions, like, of course, that the project shall be developed consistent with the general plan, consistent with the zoning ordinance, and it should be developed based on what they actually submitted. So they can't come up with something completely different in 2 months and claim that it's the same project. So we include all of those things in the conditions of approval. So say, hey, remember, this is what you wanted to do, so please do that. And there's also project-specific conditions. Like, this is an example I took out of a tentative parcel map for Reedley family, because remember, they divided the land, but there's still an apartment complex on both. So this was the condition that they had to provide a cross-access agreement. So it lists who has to provide the cross-access agreement, what they have to provide, which is a cross-access agreement, which parcels, and it has to be recorded prior to occupancy of the building. So it gives them a timeline and what they need to do by that timeline. And so that alleviates any potential issues, you know, for access and for utilities, which is something that we talked about. So that's an example of a condition that kind of covers everything, and it's clear as to what has to be done in order for the project to be occupied and operate smoothly.
I think the cats are too cute, though.
I know.
Usually the people you run into, they're a lot meaner than that. They look a lot meaner than these cats.
Very true, yeah. And it's also very misleading because they're standing still in the picture, and usually they're all over the place and they all have their own things to do. Yeah. So it's hard to get them all together and give them and have them give me conditions. But they're very cute. I agree. So this comes to part three, which is the actual approval. So we have all the information. We have all of the information from all of the different entities. And so now we come to approval. And so there's three types of approval: ministerial, discretionary, or legislative action. So I did want to go through those fairly quickly. So ministerial action is basically something that is approved in-house. So city staff approves that. And so that's basically, you've got a checklist. So are the setbacks okay? Good. So you have set goals and set lists and things that have to be achieved in order for it to be approved. And so examples are for site plan reviews. So you look at all of the property development standards and make sure that they are complying with all of the setbacks and all the parking requirements. So that's something that can be approved by city staff. And there's also home occupation permits, which we haven't really talked a lot about, but it's if somebody wants to do a business in their home, we have set standards that they have to follow in order for them to do a home occupation permit. And if they set those standards and there are no comments from neighbors, then they're approved. Yes.
Question. Sure. On the home occupation permits, mm-hmm. if there are comments from neighbors, negative comments from neighbors, mm-hmm. can that progress to the next level and come to Planning Commission for approval?
It can.
Or just stay at discretionary or ministerial?
It can, and some home occupations themselves can go up to the level of going to the Planning Commission. Examples are like large family daycare homes. That is technically a home occupation permit, but it goes up to conditional use permit because of the number of kids. But that is a good question. If there is negative comments to that can't be worked out, because if somebody does have a comment, they do come to the city, and then we contact the applicant and talk to them about things that that the applicant could potentially do to help alleviate the concerns that somebody has. But they could be appealed, and it could go to Planning Commission if they can't resolve the issues.
Can I jump in? We try to mediate, whether it be ministerially or even if it's discretionary. You know, we put out public notices, and, you know, for a hearing, and somebody may come and complain, and, you know, and we have all seen the "I just don't like it" letter. You know, they don't tell you anything other than "I just don't like it, and so don't do it." And so our job is to try and facilitate, what does that mean? And sometimes, you know, we have to sit down, put the applicant and one of the cats in the room, and try and figure out, okay, so what is it that you don't like? Or, you know, can the developer do this or that? Or, and we did that with Les Schwab, the gentleman who lives next door. I mean, he wasn't complaining, but he was asking some questions, and we put them together with Les Schwab, and they got it worked out. When we can't work it out, and we've done it enough that we kind of know when it's like, okay, this isn't going to go anywhere, and then I, as the director, have to make the call as to whether it's ministerial or not. And to be honest with you, it's a tough one, because sometimes you go, it's a ministerial action, there is no appeal, we understand your concern, but we're moving ahead.
So like a small daycare, home run daycare, home occupation, but it's not the one that would be a
under
discretionary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do the neighbors, do you guys notify the neighbors for those?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, yeah. They're notified.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we actually send them a copy of the standards to say that this is what your neighbor has to do in order to comply with the home occupation standards. So in order for them to maintain their home occupation, they have to, some examples, there can't be more than 4 customers that visit the home per day. But we do encourage that even less than that visit the home per day, that there aren't any, that you, it's not a huge, like they can't have any commercial signage on their property. It has to be maintained as a single family home. They park their vehicle in the garage. There aren't a lot of cars parked on the street. They don't have commercial. There are certain home occupation, or I'm sorry, certain uses that are prohibited as a home occupation. So there are those standards that are followed, and the applicant has to read those, make sure they comply. And then we do notice the neighboring property owners. We send them a letter, and if they have any concerns or anything, they can talk to us about it.
So in other words, if someone is concerned about a home business going in that they're just not happy about, and they respond to your letter and they come to you, you let the applicant know that you had someone come in after the letters were mailed and they had a concern regarding this portion of your plan. Mm-hmm. That way, they don't know names. They know what the concern was. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, and depending on, just kind of depending on the complaint or the concern, we will try to mediate that process, because they know who is applying and where it's going to be, obviously, we could do that. And it hasn't happened to me yet since I've been here. So everybody, there was one person that called and they didn't really know what the letter meant. They thought that somebody in their apartment complex was doing home occupation permit or something, but I was just sending him notice and he said, okay, I don't see a problem with it. So I haven't had any issues, but if there is one, then we would try to work it out and even maybe modify the operational statement a little bit to be more clear and to address that issue. Like if somebody was worried that there would be a lot of customers coming, then we would say, well, they can only have 4 per day. But according to their operational statement, it looks like they're only going to have 1 or 2 per day or 1 or 2 per week or something like that. So we can try to clear that up if that makes the concern a little bit, or if the concerned person more comfortable, then we'll try to work with the applicant and see if that works. other approvals done by city staff for administrative review. So that's mostly in commercial businesses where somebody's establishing a new use somewhere. And so, like, let's say it goes from a retail, what?
A beauty salon to a pharmacy.
Exactly. A beauty salon to a pharmacy is a prime example, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both of the uses are permitted in that zone district. It's by right, but they're according to our code. If you establish a new use, then you would have to do an administrative review application. So it's pretty basic, and includes an operational statement of what they're planning to do, hours of operation, those sorts of things. And so that can usually end up being an over-the-counter process if they provide all the information we need.
So let me jump on administrative review. This one's really hard for us, and it's hard for a couple of reasons. One, it's been on the books for 30 years, but really not enforced for the last 2.5. So that's a little bit of a problem because you never made me do that before.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep, heard
but
that.
But here's the issue, and we tell people, and this has happened to me, and it's happened somewhere down on G Street, where somebody started and wanted to do new business, and it was really good that we actually were able to get them to do an administrative review. And the reason it was good because, you know, bless their heart, they started out with what they thought would be really good, but one of the things that they wanted to do was refinishing of furniture. Okay, well, all of that becomes hazardous materials.
A little bit different.
So how does that hazardous material get handled? Or if you're doing that in a showroom type, do you have the appropriate ventilation, right? And so it's not really, it was never intended to go, what are you doing there? But to provide that opportunity that, okay, do you have the right ventilation? You know, gosh, now we can let the fire department know you got a whole wall of hazardous materials, and if there should ever be a fire, they'll know what's there or whatever. So it's never, at least under this administration, really been viewed as something to be punitive, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's to make sure that we just get a good understanding of what you're trying to do. And if you're changing it, let us know. It's really a letter, a quick application, and Ellen's phenomenal at these things, and it's usually a day or two over the counter, if not just over the counter. So it's just something that helps us keep record of what's in the building, what's going on, how things are moving. You know, you convert from a good example would be, you know, you used to be doing uniforms and now you're doing bakery goods. Well, how does that work? And what are the health department requirements and so on and so forth. So, you know, it really does help us get a good understanding of what's in buildings and things like that. So, and those are really public spaces. So, yeah, that's pretty important.
And the saying goes, it's like for like. So if a salon is there and then that salon moves out, another one moves in, it's the same type of business. So they would just need a business license. But if it's going from something that's very different or even a little bit different, then that's when the administrative review comes in because of those reasons, just to make sure that that everything will be appropriate for that use in that building. And then kind of moving on. And does anyone need to take a break, by the way? Are we good?
How long have we got?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
3 hours.
We got 3 hours? Yep.
We're good.
All right. We still got tacos, so. Okay. And the other ministerial actions are lot line adjustments and parcel mergers. So that is basically just moving a line over, like moving a parcel over a little bit or merging two together. So those are something that we do in-house, and we have a surveyor look at them and make sure that those work out. So then we go up level to discretionary action, which is planning commission approval. So it's a lot of things that you guys have seen, like conditional use permits and tentative or subdivision or tentative parcel maps and tentative subdivision maps. Those are things that, you guys approve. And also you make recommendations to city council. So you are the first person to see a lot of the projects, a lot of the land use projects. And because of all of the experience and projects that you've seen, you provide great recommendations to council because of all of the projects that you see. And then moving up to council, they have discretionary approval as well for some things like final parcel maps and final subdivision maps. But something else that they do approve is, or the action that they take is legislative action. So they're the ultimate governing body that approves text amendments, which is a change of the actual code. So that's a legislative action. Development agreements, that's something in writing that sometimes goes along with final maps, and general plan amendments and changes of zone. Those are actually changing legislation, if you will, and approving the general plan. So that is ultimately approved by commission, but all of those do go to the planning commission as well for recommendation. And for discretionary and legislative action for planning commission and city council, because they involve public hearings, there we always send out a public hearing notice, we publish it in the paper, and we send notice to surrounding property owners so they know they can come to the public hearing and provide comment.
When you send those letters out, what is the miles, is it like 1 mile, 2 miles of who might want to come? No, what is it?
The requirement is the government code requires it to be 300 feet around the property, and that's around the boundaries of the property.
Okay.
So I unfortunately don't have a map with me or an example of that map, but it is 300 feet. We send it 350 feet out of an abundance of caution, so that everybody that's in that vicinity can comment if they'd like. And they can either do that by calling us and verbally letting us know, they can write letters, and they can also appear at council. And so depending on the comment or concern, we, as Kevin mentioned, we can pair them with the applicant to resolve things. We can, and they also are more than welcome to talk about that at the public hearing.
I've seen it. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked, because I wondered how far you send, just out of curiosity.
So if I might add, this for me is a really important concept or concepts, this ministerial discretionary and legislative action. So, and it's important, I think, just to spend a minute more on it, because if you were wondering why you make recommendations to the council for some things, on the same project, there will be some recommendations that you'll be making to council and some things you'll be approving. And then if you show up at the council meeting, you go, well, wait a minute, how come you're not approving the tentative map? Because it's kind of like they don't have that authority. You do. You're the decision-making body for conditional use permits or track maps or, you know, any of the tentative mapping that goes on.
Which would be why when I'm at a council meeting and you make the statement on staff's behalf that the Planning Commission has recommended that you that you accept these proposals because they've gone through the different things and felt it would be a good plan.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, let me talk about that, because at the next planning or at the next city council, I'm going to talk about that, the very issue you just rose. One, it's my perspective that you folks are the experts in land use. You make the decisions using your own independent judgment every other Thursday. Staff stands up and makes recommendations. But it's just kind of professional recommendation to you and the council that the council ought to be relying on you, not just because Kevin stands up on every other Thursday and every other Tuesday to go, hey, I think you ought to do this. No. So, like, the council was unaware that the citywide rezone was coming to them. But I'm going to explain to them that it's important for you to make that decision first, because it's a land use decision. And quite frankly, if it had come to you first and you said no, it would have been done. So there's, we're trying really hard as you folks that have come on board, a new level of understanding and planning. It's kind of a new day in planning anyway for the city with our general plan, economic development. And we just think it's really important for you to be involved and know and be part of a process for land use, not just you show up every other Thursday and then it goes on to council, or the council doesn't ever hear from you or wonder what's going on. So for us, it's trying to make sure that you and the council are kind of in sync and everybody understands that, you know, when it comes to land use, it's you guys. And so, we really think that the recommendation bodes well and holds a lot more validity than just simply staff standing up going, oh, we think you ought to do it. The planning commission's weighed in and voted, however you choose to vote on any given day, on any given topic, is really valuable to the council. And I'd like council to appreciate maybe your value a little bit more than maybe in the past, So that's kind of why we're doing some of the things that we're doing, but also understanding some of this about that legislative versus discretionary. Because we'll ask you to make recommendations to them, but then there are other things we want you to approve. I hope that makes a little bit of sense.
Is that up to you and Ellen to decide if it's going to be something that's going to go for approval here, or it's going to be?
No. Okay. We don't have that authority.
I think you guys are pretty knowledgeable folks.
We may be knowledgeable.
You totally got me fooled.
There's a difference between knowledge and authority. And I may be pretty good about some things, but we rely on what the code says.
Okay.
And the code says that, and state law says, the council has legislative authority. And our code says you have discretionary authority. And the code says the director has ministerial authority. So we're just following those lines. And we bring this up because when we look at projects, you know, we go, oh, hey, that's site plan review ministerial. No problem. I can sign off on it. Then, you know, we know that when the CUP is required, that it's, you know, discretionary. And we know that when a general plan amendment is, you know, it's, you know, a legislative authority. You're changing the law, if you will. And we try to be respectful of you folks so that, for example, if you approve a tentative tract map, we don't take that map to the city council. You've approved it. It's done. You know, we just go to the council and say, hey, exercise your legislative authority, approve the general plan amendment, rezone, and you're done. So we try real hard to respect everybody's authority all the way up that chain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they don't like your decision. They can appeal it, but that's kind of a different process. So we try to set those kind of, they all build on each other. And we believe it's important that, you know, the council make its decisions and kind of stay out of your land use stuff. And you stay out of their legislative stuff and you do land use. So it's all written in the code, and we're just kind of following the kind of the chain of command, if you will.
Hmm.
I don't get to decide. I don't have omnipotent power or anything like that. She doesn't have a magic wand. We kind of follow what the rules of the road are in the code.
Thank you.
And just a quick note about appeals. So as Kevin mentioned, people can appeal site plan reviews after they're approved. It could be the applicant if they don't like a condition, or it could be a concerned citizen. It could be you planning commission, it could be city council, but so that you can appeal processes or you can appeal applications. So if it's a ministerial action, then it would go to the planning commission and they would either approve or deny the appeal, I guess. I don't think that's the right wording, but you will uphold it or maintain that the project's approved the way it is. And sometimes it can be appealed further to council, or similarly, if a conditional use permit is appealed, then it would go to council. So it is also following that chain of command, as Kevin mentioned. So that's a little note. And that's also, the appeal process is also something that is kind of a workshop of its own. But, so if anyone was actually wondering what happens after the appeal period is, I do have a couple of slides on it. So after the conditional use permit is approved or after the tentative, this mostly applies to conditional use permits and site plan review. So this is actually when construction is happening, because sometimes you can approve a map and nobody does anything for a while, and then they come in and either do a site plan review, or the site plan review is approved, and then they can pull building permits. So this is just kind of a quick explanation of what the next steps are. So when somebody has the site plan review that's approved, they have their conditions of approval, they have their checklist. And so when you pull building permits to begin construction, the building department becomes the routers and we become the cat in this instance. So they bring the site plan back to us to make sure that it was what was approved, and any conditions of approval that needed to be done prior to certificate of occupancy or prior to pulling the actual building permits. So that's another checklist, and we make sure that all those things are done during the building process and then up to final occupancy. So all the things that were talked about during the site plan review, okay, this is what you have to do down the line when you pull building permits, that's what we check up on and make sure all of those things were done. And a couple of things to think about after the approval process is over and after the appeal period. It's in our municipal code that entitlements run with the land. So if a site plan is approved and that entitlement, that site plan review stays with the land. It doesn't go with the applicant. It doesn't go with the owner if the ownership changes. Whoever owns the property, they have the rights to that entitlement. And so they can still develop even if the ownership changes. And so something that's very important about that is because it runs with the land, they still have to comply with all of the conditions of approval. So let's say that somebody has, or there was an entitlement approved and then the owner sold the property to somebody else. So that person has the conditions of approval, and so they will have to follow those if they're going to be the ones that pull building permits and actually construct the what was approved. So that's just kind of something to think about, that the entitlements run with the land. And so technically an entitlement can stay on the property forever, but there are some things that you have to do because entitlements can expire if the land remains inactive. And by that, they haven't done anything on it, they haven't pulled building permits, they haven't talked to us at all, and so it's approved, and then a year passes, and then nothing happens, so it's expired. So then that entitlement goes away, and they have to apply for something else, or the same thing, but they still have to go through the process. So in order to keep an active entitlement, you can request an extension with us pursuant to the Reedley Municipal Code. For site plan reviews and conditional use permits, the expiration period is a year. So let's say somebody gets a site plan approved and then 9 months later they still haven't done anything, they can write us a letter and then an extension request can be made and it can be approved. Or what somebody can do, like Les Schwab, for example, we approved their site plan review, and then a couple weeks later, they came in to get their building permits. So they were excited to come to Reedley, and so they were able to submit everything, and so that entitlement is permanently with the land, and so there will be construction pretty soon. So that's just a quick note. And then we're getting to the end here. So just some final thoughts for me is that every project is different, and it always depends on the disposition, as I said, but each overall process is the same. And this is something that keeps me sane, is because there's a lot of different nuances in projects, but ultimately you still have to ask the same questions, you still have to go through the same checklists, and so that kind of helps with the process. And it also makes things interesting because there is something different about each project. And my advice to you is to make your own mental checklists to help, you know, if projects come forward, you can pick certain things to look for in addition to all the usual, you know, general plan, zoning ordinance stuff, so that all of this stuff, all of these colors and all these processes here becomes planning harmony for you all. And so you can actually herd cats and everything's right with the world. So that concludes my report of the overview of planning. And this is something that I would love to achieve. Herding cats would be a very nice thing to be able to do. But this includes my report. So I'm happy to answer any questions you guys may have. And thank you very much.
I have one. I think this is awesome. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
Hit it on the nail.
Good.
I agree.
Good.
I appreciate the extra time to be able to just ask, you know, do some dialogue and ask questions that it may seem to you guys that we ought to be clear on it, but for some reason it's just not processing quite through. But if you run us through it, then it totally makes sense.
Good.
And that doesn't mean we're not going to go back, or I mean I will. I'll go back and digest this a heck of a lot more, too, because now I have an idea.
Mm-hmm. So, if I can, we welcome you calling us and asking us questions.
Well, I'm just going to say I've called Ellen a few times. Mm-hmm. I called her this morning, actually.
Good. I mean, that's what we're here to do, and, you know, I wish Ron were here because, you know, he almost fell out of his chair when I first started and said, my job's here to support you. You know, if you like something, great. If you don't, let's talk about it. You know, I have to be careful in how I say this, but if you want to know if there's something you don't like about a project, then let's figure it out. You know, let's sit down and talk about it, and we can, you know, if the council does or the planning commission doesn't want to approve a project, you just need to let me know. I can help you, you know, make that happen, because we know these projects most of the time better than the developers do. Obviously, we don't bring you projects we don't think are worthy, but, you know, we're more than happy to help you come up with the best decision, you know, you can. And you don't have to follow our recommendations all the time. Trust me, you won't hurt our feelings if you tell us no, because that's just part of the game. But just let us know how we can help you in any way. Questions? The more, you know, I always tell Ellen, the more projects you do, the easier it becomes. The more you understand, get a few more projects under your belt, and it'll move along pretty easily for you.
Awesome. Any updates? Thank you for the presentation.
I just have very one. Wanted to let you know that as of last Thursday, the triangle was officially recorded, and it is now part of the city of Reedley. So we have grown by another 20 acres. Kind of excited about that. And that's really all I have to report.
How's the bridge? Oh, the bridge, you already said it's coming along.
Coming along.
Yeah.
Well, it got put.
Went over it a couple times today.
The deck's been poured.
I see.
It's amazing how different it is.
Yeah. And so they're out there walking on it, and I think it's a 20-day cure period. So you'll just see, like I said, a handful of guys, three or four, left. And they're out watering it down every day, and, you know, it's coming along. Anything else we can answer for you? Any questions you have? Anything you want to know? Gabriel, you know, you live the dream with us every day.
Well, actually, I don't really do that much anymore at the with TCAG. We just deal mainly with transportation funding, and that's a total different animal from this planning stuff. And I only really had maybe a year and a half of exposure to city-type planning. The rest was CEQA, as you know, and LAFCO. So
we have...
But, yeah, it was very informative. I appreciate
excellent.
Alan's presentation and Kevin's information as well. It was great.
So we have a regular meeting on Thursday?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Two items.
Pretty big.
Are you anticipating a lot of people showing up for that? Because I noticed there were a few here last 2 weeks ago, but it got continued.
Right. So the folks that were here, those were owners.
The landowners for the property.
Yeah, the landowners, the developer. The landowners and the realtor. So the next time I would suspect an attorney may or may not show up. The developer will be here definitely. I don't know if you convinced anybody to come.
No.
It should be. We have not received one single phone call.
No negative. No comments.
Now, the comments we do hear are from, I happened to run into, I was talking to so-and-so who heard about it, and we got talking about it, and they thought it was a great project. But nobody has come forth and put anything.
Nobody from across the street in the neighborhood saying anything. And all the map or the tentative, architectural rendering that has been given to those people too, or is it posted somewhere?
It's all posted online.
So the letter would tell the people that live across the street, if you want more details, go online.
Well, the letter also says, okay, so when we send out notices, mm-hmm. And I don't know if we have any around, but it describes the action that you're going to take. So it's tentative track map number, blah, 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 mm-hmm. to do this. Or, it's a CUP number to do that. And then they're always encouraged to call us if they have any questions. They come in, they can meet with us. We post it in the paper, so on and so forth. Now, I can't say this, because I think Ellen gave you the packet for Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
When we originally noticed the project, it did not include a development agreement. The developers come back and asked for a development agreement, which we've been negotiating. And so we actually had to re-notice it. So we put another notice in the paper, which the developer paid for. And so now the kind of new twist is a development agreement, which is in your packet. But the project in and of itself has not changed. None of that has changed at all.
So this is an example. This is what we publish in the newspaper. It's in the sports section. And then this was that example that I was talking about. That's what we sent. This was for a conditional
use. Oh, the area.
So that's the area that we send. And it's from the borders of the property. So that's what we send. And then we also provide... This is the letter that we send, and it's basically what was in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so our recent notices, we actually put the map on there, so it shows where the property is. So that kind of alerts people if they live near there, if they're looking in the paper, if they, in addition to getting a notice, that's something that...
Look at that.
No anticipation of anybody. Well, we'll see. Anything else, guys, so we can adjourn? No?
Nothing.
All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.